And we're with Rosemary Ellen Guiley with her work, Mysteries of the Afterlife. Let's take your phone calls, stories, questions next. And welcome back with Rosemary Ellen Guiley, your phone calls as well, as we talk about mysteries of the afterlife. When we were working on Talking to the Dead, we came up with the different scenarios, of course, of where people could communicate. But I think the easiest way is, as we were talking, Rosemary, in the dream state, isn't it?
It certainly is. It's one of the most frequent ways that we have all kinds of contact experiences, otherworldly realities, angels, religious figures, and certainly the dead. Now, not everybody gets dream visits from the dead, and in fact, it seems to have a lot to do with the way somebody dreams, because and that's a factor of consciousness that we don't really know what the mechanics of that are in terms of the subtle energies of connecting with otherworldly realities. But the dead will sometimes say that it might be difficult to get through to a person. There is such a thing as a proxy dream. That's a term that I came up with to describe a class of dreams whereby the message for the intended person goes to somebody else who is able to get the dream experience, and then they need to become a messenger and relay that to the person for whom it is intended.
What about pets? Do they communicate with us in either the dream state or the near-death experience state?
They do. And I do have a section on communication with pets in the sister volume, Contact with the Dead. They will come back during dream state visits. They will also come back in apparitional ways, just like humans might. People might actually see glimpses of their deceased pets for a period of time following their transition. They may hear them. Hearing them like dogs walking on a hardwood floor, for example, or the jingle of a collar. They may feel the pressure of an animal that like to jump up on furniture or up on the bed. They may even hear them, bird songs, barking, meowing. Those also are common. And people have glimpsed their pets in near-death experiences as well. They may be among the welcoming committee on the other side.
It's amazing how that works. And do you think pets have souls, Rosemary?
I've always believed that all living things have souls and that they participate in the afterlife states with us. To me, the idea that animals don't, or that they would go somewhere else, it doesn't make sense in terms of the relationship that people have, especially with their pets. We're just as close to our pets as we are our family members, and so why would we not continue with that on the other side? I do believe that I will be reunited with my various pets when I make my transition.
Didn't you have some kind of dead visitation in your dream?
Well, I've had dream encounters with my two dogs that I had back in the 80s and 90s, and I had a very profound dream visit from my father about 2 weeks after he passed. And Dad had unfinished business. It was personal. You know, nobody ever dies with their to-do list complete.
Right.
They're all...
And it's never at the right time, that's for sure.
Exactly. And so Dad had unfinished business. He died suddenly on an operating table and had an aneurysm and died on the operating table. And so... even though his health hadn't been very good, I think it was a shock. And his dream visit was an encounter that enabled me to help him make his complete transition, because we had a conversation in which I said, you know, you can't stay here. I felt him kind of lingering about the earth plane. And in fact, I learned from my mother, who was quite psychic during her lifetime, years later, finally telling her about this experience, I learned from her that she sensed his presence in the house for about 2 weeks after he died, and then suddenly it seemed that he went away. And that was about the time that I had the dream visit with him, which was a real experience to me. It was like I was talking to him just as though he were still physically alive. These are descriptions that people who have these encounters give over and over again. They almost can't believe that it happened during a dream state or lucid dream because it was so realistic.
Let's go to the phones now. Let's pick it up by going to Kenny in Nashville, Georgia. Welcome to the program. Hi, Ken. Go ahead.
Hey, George. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing. My pleasure.
My father's been gone about 6 years now, and we had a very close relationship, but I never really got to say goodbye to him. And about 2 years after his death, in a dream, we used to have get-togethers, and we have a pool out back, and he always enjoyed that. But in this dream, I was standing in our kitchen looking out the window, and my dad was standing out there, and I knew he was dead. In the dream, it's like I knew he was dead, but he waved at me, and I waved back, and we didn't talk or anything. It's like we made eye contact. It was so real. But ever since then, it was like I got to say goodbye to him. And I've just never forgot it. And it just made me feel so different.
It does change people, doesn't it, Rosemary?
It does. These are incredibly powerful experiences. And they often help people resolve grief issues, closure. You know, like Kenny was saying, I didn't get to say goodbye. A lot of us don't.
Right.
And so this visitation gives us the opportunity to do that. And we usually know in the experience that the person has passed on, even though they seem real and lifelike to us.
Sure does. Joe in Long Island, New York, east of the Rockies. Hey, Joe, go ahead.
Hi, Rosemary. You were talking about survivalist. And if you look at what's happening now, there might be a massive hurricane hitting land, North Carolina. That could be a survivalist, complicated situation. And then people might put themselves in situations like that, like Admiral Perry going to the North Pole, people climbing Mount Everest. Would you say, how would you approach it? Would you say people should seek angelic help, err on the side of super caution, and then how about the unexpected survivalist mode? Now, for example, you would normally think that nature wouldn't turn on you like a flock of birds wouldn't suddenly attack you, but should you have a slight ask for protection from angels or something even as bizarre as that possibly happening?
Well, there are many accounts of people having rescues from life-threatening situations by beings that they describe as angels. And I've always felt close to angels throughout my life and believe that any kind of spiritual connection we have, whether it's with angels or religious figures, anything that helps strengthen our connection to something transcendent, is going to bring some protection around us. And I've always believed in the power of prayer as well. And so many miraculous stories can be told in regard to all of those things. And, you know, yet there are times when we still have the experiences where people are affected in ways that they bring about their demise, they have their transition. It gets back to what I was saying a little earlier in the show about the whole thing about near-death experiences, raising questions about when is it our time to go? Do we have a choice in the matter, and how much choice, or are we predestined to go in certain ways? People who believe in reincarnation will sometimes say that, well, the manner in which we go has a lot to do with not only this life, but with karmic balancing from other lives as well. And we don't really have all the answers to all of these questions, but our research, our talking about it, I believe it's important to talk about these things, to report these things, because unless these experiences are reported, we don't have information and data to be able to start to put together patterns and possible explanations.
Next up, let's go to Jeremiah in Nebraska. Hello there, Jeremiah. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi, George and Rosemary.
Hi.
Some pretty powerful stuff that you guys are talking about tonight.
Sure is.
I certainly have a lot to tell. I know we don't have all that time in the world to do it, but I myself have had a near-death experience. It's ironic that I'm calling tonight and getting on the program because 18 years ago, tomorrow marks the day that my best friend passed away. And also my other best friend, who's a 14-year-old Chesapeake, his health has deteriorated and quality of life is not good, and he will be euthanized tomorrow as well. So it's a little ironic that these dates come together. But I guess, you know, to kind of talk about the experiences I've been going through, and I tell you, George and Rosemary, I mean, the stuff that you guys talk about and you put out there and the people you have on and the stories that are being told and all the people that are involved that have experienced these things, it's incredible. And I have a photograph of a picture of me at my best friend, Jaron. He crashed into a culvert on a highway here in Nebraska. And six months after his death, we stopped at his crash site, me and his fiance at the time, but we stopped at the crash site, and I knew me and Jaron had a really good connection, because we were having dreams, and I mean, there was one dream he even told me how he was learning how to use his wings, but he couldn't get off the ground that high, but they were helping him learning how to use his wings. And I mean, and I knew right away that Jaron was an angel, just like all of our ETs, our angels, once they pass. And anyhow, I walked over to Chrissy and I said, we took two pictures of the cross. And we made a cross at his crash site, just to let you know what I mean, the cross. So anyhow, I told Chrissy, I said, we took one picture with a before, and then I walked over to Chrissy and I said, Chrissy, I'm going to walk over to the cross. I'm going to turn around, I'm going to look up, I'm going to open my palms, and I'm going to ask him to show himself. And he did. And I have the picture to prove it. And the light is so bright. In my near-death experience, the light was so bright. When the ETs came to us last summer, and I saw the light, it was bright. And I've been touched, and I have a story to share with everybody, just like all the stories that can be shared, but there's something bigger going on.
Well, there's no question about that. But how big is it, Rosemary?
I think it's bigger than we can even conceive of. And research into abduction experiences, contact experiences with alien beings, beings we would call ETs, higher beings, these have aspects involving the afterlife as well, that these beings are participating in something that involves us, and not just earthly life, but other lives and the afterlife as well. And there are contact experiences that are very NDE-like, where people go through the same sorts of transitions and changes. They become different people. Their values change. Their worldviews change. They might even feel physiologically different. Kundalini kind of effects. I've seen that in both NDE and contact experiences, where people become more psychic, more sensitive and empathic to other people. They may even exhibit an onset of healing energy, where they have energy. They feel energy flowing through their bodies and out their hands, and all of these things are interconnected. So, rather than trying to isolate NDEs, for example, they need to be examined within a broader context of mystical and contact experiences in general.
Next up, let's get another call in before the break. Jeremiah, thank you for yours. Mike in Cleveland, welcome to the program. Mike,
Good morning, George. Good morning, Rosemary. Rosemary, I believe that you gave a reading to a friend of mine 20 years ago in which you asked about me. And I've had several experiences in my life, and I believe I've died multiple times and had multiple negative NDEs.
Negatives?
Negative. You had a guest on when I first started listening to you, George, that basically when you die, you go to a black void. And I was wondering if what you thought about that. And I think I repressed it my whole life until a few years ago. And since then, I've been more, I guess you say clairvoyant for certain things. And my brother just recently moved out of town, and since then, I've become more clairvoyant. And I just wonder what you thought about that. And I think maybe one of these days we'll get together, Rosemary. And thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome. What about the darker side, Rosemary?
There are documented accounts of people going into this black void where they feel that there's nothing. There's no light. There's no sense of God or supreme being. They're disconnected from the earthly life, from anything else. And it can be quite terrifying, as you can imagine. In some cases, people are then pulled back into the body. In some cases, they do see a light emerge somewhere. And they have some sort of sense of being directed back into their bodies. The reasons for these experiences seem to be quite varied, and some of it has to do with beliefs about the afterlife. Someone who has no particular belief may not have any context for having a more detailed kind of experience. If people have a subconscious fear of death, that might play into it as well. The negative experiences do need to be understood as well as the positive ones. We all like to hear about the positive ones because it certainly fuels our own hope that we are going on to something better once we leave the earthly plane. But the negative ones do need attention and study, and for a long time they were kind of like the unwanted stepchildren of the NDE field because nobody really knew how to grapple with them. And we can't even say what percentage of near-death experiences are negative, because here again it's a reporting factor. If people do not report their experiences positive or negative, we can't evaluate them and quantify them. So these experiences are out there, and why they happen, there seem to be a lot of subjective factors to it, just as there are subjective factors to the positive ones.
Rosemary, where do we get the book Mysteries of the Afterlife?
It's available on Amazon and in many bookstores. It's also in ebooks on Kindle, iBooks, Google, and Nook and Kobo.
All right, we're going to come back with final calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, on our next Coast to Coast program, we're going to talk about how mushrooms can help save the world. That's right. And then later on, we're going to be talking about a poltergeist of the state of Washington. So get ready for that. And welcome back. Our final segment with Rosemary Ellen Guiley, author of Mysteries of the Afterlife and also Contact with the Dead. And what are you working on next, Rosemary?
Well, I'm doing a book on time and space slips and time travel, and that will probably be out after the first of the year. Very interesting material there.
Well, it sure is. And, of course, you're going to be at the Afterlife Symposium in Scottsdale, where you are now. I'll be there on Saturday, and I'm looking forward to our panel and our banquet and everything else.
It's going to be a great event with participants and experts from all over the world. And we just got into Scottsdale today. I'm gearing up for my first Black Mirror workshop tomorrow and really looking forward to reconnecting with a lot of my colleagues in the field.
Is the Black Mirror something spooky?
Some people might think so, but actually it's a very powerful psychic tool, and it can be used for contact with the dead. That's primarily what I use it for. Shiny black surfaces have been in use for thousands of years as a way to contact the spirit world.
How do they work?
Well, they work by helping to fatigue the physical senses, especially the physical eyes. You gaze into one with an intention in dim light, and at some point your psychic faculty starts to take over, and the mirror acts like a bridge to the astral plane or to otherworldly realities. And once you are sort of in a space, a liminal space that's beyond physical reality, you can then have contact experiences. And for some people, they're quite detailed with a lot of visual detail, sounds, even smells, physical touch. And for other people, it's more of a mental sort of thing, that the phenomena are stimulated in an interior way to play out in the mental screen rather than in the mirror. Many people have profound connections with the dead with black mirror gazing.
Let's go to final calls. First time caller, Charmaine in Amarillo, Texas. Hello, Charmaine.
Hi. First time caller, long time listener.
Well, thank you. Glad you got in.
Yes, me too. My question is, my dad was murdered in 1981, and I was wondering what happened to him. Do you believe he was reincarnated, or did he just go to heaven? And the reason I'm asking this is because back when they had the cameras where you could take a picture and the picture would develop right when it came out of the camera.
Mm-hmm. Polaroids.
I was sitting next to his grave, and my husband had taken a picture, and there was my father standing directly behind me in a silhouette. And I always wondered what happened to him, because he was murdered in such a violent way.
Well, people who have met violent ends have the same path to the afterlife as people who have other kinds of transitions. Sometimes if they've had a sudden shock of death, they might remain on the earth plane for a while before they make their transition. They may feel even lost or confused, but eventually they get to the afterlife. And I believe that they are capable of remaining close to us, like someone who has had a natural death passing, that the same opportunities for reincarnation would be available to them as well. At what point people reincarnate is uncertain. There is some evidence from research in reincarnation that there are souls who reincarnate rather quickly. And for others, we have to remember that the passage of earthly years doesn't exist in the afterlife. And so what may be a very long time for us might pass before they take on another life.
Charmaine, thanks. How has your work, Rosemary, affected your belief system?
It certainly validated a lot of my beliefs. And from a very early age, I never, for example, believed in a final judgment. I believed in an afterlife that was more fluid and malleable and changeable. I always believed in reincarnation. And the research that I've done in afterlife studies and in reincarnation has reinforced a lot of those beliefs and expanded them. I've certainly learned a lot from my study of near-death experiences and afterlife communication. These are important areas for us to understand. The biggest question of all that human beings face is what happens to us after we die.
And, of course, that answer is well known, isn't it, now, with you?
Well, yes, I believe in an afterlife that is I want to say forgiving. People who have communicated from the other side say that we are held accountable. I do believe in the concept of karma, and karma can be very harsh, but that every soul has a chance for redemption, and that these are choices that souls must make. And for some who have done a lot of bad things, for example, committed mass murders,
mm-hmm.
It may be a long path for rehabilitation and some very unpleasant areas of the afterlife. And then I believe at some point when we start making decisions about our next incarnation, we move into reaches of the afterlife that are very remote to us here in this life. And that may be points at which the dead become less accessible to us because they've moved into a more subtle realm beyond the ability of living consciousness to access.
Robert is truck driving in Idaho, and welcome to the show, Robert.
Hey, Rosemary, George.
Hi.
Hey, I had a open heart surgery and had a triple bypass, and my daughter was there with me, and then my sister and brother-in-law came, and it was not a good surgery, and when I really came to out of it and could communicate, I got a board and started writing down. And one of the first things I remember writing down was I saw stuff that no man should ever have to see. And I have like a picture of a gargoyle or some weird beast.
Mm.
And I feel it, and I saw some horrific stuff. I get little bits of it come back to me. But I believe my angel brought me back. And I don't know if it was something to show me where I was going to go. Alan, I definitely don't want to go there. But, yeah, it was pretty rough. And then at the end of, I was intubated for like 11 days. And right at the very end, they wouldn't take the tube out of me because they said I had fluid on my lungs, you know, like a pneumonia. But it got so bad that on the 11th day, I just rode down to the doctor. I'm ready to give up because I was like grounding and couldn't breathe. And they came in and took x-rays and rushed me back into the operating room and pumped my lungs out and took the tube out. And they said they probably have to put it back in. But I just got dramatically better. I mean, just it was phenomenal to the doctors. So I wonder what I saw and if that adds meaning.
I don't know what you saw, but it does affect it, Rosemary, doesn't it?
Yes, they certainly do. And the impact of that can last for many years, even a lifetime. Sometimes people have, the scary images because of underlying subconscious fears that we might not even be aware of. And I'm not saying this is the case with Robert. I'm just generalizing about the negative NDE kind of experience. And sometimes it has to do with underlying emotions about being on the right path. People have been having, self-destructive kind of habits that can contribute to an unpleasant near-death experience as well. And so there are many factors involved. We also have to take into consideration the conditions under which the experience was had, prior experiences in an individual's life that might have been life-threatening or scary in a way that could come into play.
Let's take a few more calls here before the clock gets us. Elaine's in Fort Myers, Florida. Hi, Elaine. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Hi. I just want to, I was so glad to be able to report this, like, and have a actual visionary, like, keep this on record and everything. But this is the biggest story I've ever experienced. Back when I was 21, this was 47 years ago, I was 21, and my sister was 17, and I have to give a little thing here because there's two parts of it. There's one part that's a dream and the other part that's very physical. We shared a room. We had twin beds and we shared a stereo and, you know, record player. And the important thing is
I had my music, and she had her music, and I didn't like her music, and she didn't like mine. So we just, you know, tolerated that and shared the stereo records. So I decided that I was going to go on vacation, and I went on vacation with a friend of mine. I went to Jamaica, and I had just bought my first car, and I remember this horrible moment when I decided I said, well, I don't need to take the keys to my car. What do I need to worry about losing those for? You know, so I just left them there in our bedroom on the desk. And so I went on vacation, and then the last day of my vacation, I had this horrible dream. Right before I was going to come back and everything, and that I was in my car, and I was in control of it, and I was driving it down like a big highway, and there was a presence next to me in the car, and I knew whoever that was going to die, and I didn't know who it was. I just knew we were just roaring down this thing is road and everything, and we were gonna that I wasn't gonna die, but whoever that was gonna die. So woke up the next day where I came back, and I was very depressed. I couldn't figure out why. I got home, and I walked in the door, and I said, "And where's my car?" And my parents were there waiting for me, and they said, "You don't have a car anymore. And you don't have a sister anymore."
Oh.
Because they let my sister's best friend borrow my car while I was gone and go to a concert.
Oh.
And down in Miami.
They must have regretted that forever.
And yep, they're dead now, and I'm sure they do. But that when they were on their way home, a drunk cop ran a red light at an intersection and broadsided my car, totaled my car, and killed them both. And so then, you know, the devastation was unbelievable. Me and my sister loved each other, but, you know, we didn't have the same taste in music, you know. So about a week after the funeral, I was just sitting in my bedroom. I got up and I just was sitting on my twin bed and looking at her twin bed and looking up at my mirror where there was a picture she had there of herself that she like slid in the mirror and everything. And I was crying and saying, "Nancy, Nancy, what happened? I love you so much," you know, and crying, you know, and everything. And she said, "Play the stereo." And this thing came on in my head, "Play the stereo." And she did have a big album on there that I guess she played because she always played her music when she was putting on her makeup and getting ready to go out and everything. So I guess that's the last album she played while she was getting ready and all that. And nobody ever touched it, and nobody ever took it off the turntable. And it was full of dust, but I looked over at it, and there was a hand of the record player was sitting right at the beginning of the groove of a song, and the whole dust was undisturbed and everything. And I said, "Play what?" She said, I said, "It's not even plugged in." You know, I'm thinking this in my mind. She said, plug it in. You got to play it. Plug it in. And I was yelling. I'm looking at her picture. She's yelling this to me in my head. And so I said, okay. And I plugged it in, and then it just started playing.
That's the way to do it. We're almost out of time, Rosemary. They do work in mysterious ways, don't they?
That's a very dramatic visitation experience, and I've documented others like it, visitations like that. The premonition that Elaine had, where you know something is going to happen, but you're not quite sure exactly what or who, that's also very common.
Rosemary, I'll see you this weekend at the Afterlife Symposium in Scottsdale.
I'm looking forward to it, George. Thanks so much.
All right. You take care of yourself. Say hi to Joe for us. and stick with us all week long. We've got some great programs for you, including, well, a poltergeist in the state of Washington. So get ready for that. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, sign up for the free Coast Zone newsletter at coasttocoastam.com. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, Tim Banal, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.